is amazing, believe it or not. B.A. Rolfe and his orchestra, the Men About Town, and lovely Linda Lee. And here is that old statistician, Ted Jewett.
Why do you suppose Royal Crown sold a million more bottles in the city of Pensacola, Florida, in 1938 than they did in 1936? And why do you suppose Royal Crown sales in Steubenville, Ohio, are 78% ahead of last year? Because Royal Crown tastes better. Because folks like its rich, mellow flavor. Because they like its bubbling pep. Once folks try Royal Crown, they like it. And then they keep on coming back for more. We want you to try Royal Crown. We want every one of you to see for yourselves how delicious and refreshing this wonderful drink really is. So next time you're buying a cola drink, won't you do yourself a favor and say, make mine Royal Crown.
Yeah, man, yoikes. There is yon youthful Yankee yachtsman with his yawl of yanking, yowling, yeomanly yarns. Believe it or not, Bob Ripley.
Of Royal Crown, and welcome to the program tonight.
Bob, how about a preview of the program?
Why, Linda, I've just discovered some historical facts that I think will be a revelation to all of us. But first, I want to present a man who is a great hero, yet he is unlike any hero I've ever known. But first, let there be music. B.A. Rolfe and the orchestra, step forward in the company of the latest musical personality, the man with the mandolin. I would like to tell you about some of the most interesting discoveries that I've ever made in my long career of Believe It or Not. And strangely enough, they are Believe It or Nots that I first heard from my mother in the nursery.
Then your mother started you in this Believe It or Not career.
Well, not exactly, Linda. I'm afraid my mother didn't realize that she was giving me my first history lesson or starting me on a career. As a matter of fact, not until very recently did I know that the Mother Goose rhymes which she sang to me as a child were some of the most important historical records we have in the English language.
Mother Goose rhymes historical records? I thought they were a lot of childish jingles to put baby to sleep.
Oh, no, Linda. For example, in the olden days in England, there were no newspapers, no telephone, no telegraph, and, of course, no radios. The only way the news of the day could be brought to the people was through wandering minstrels who traveled from place to place and sang out the news. To make it more interesting, they would sing it in rhyme. They were the Walter Winchells of their day, but if they weren't careful, they would have had their heads chopped off. The big events of the day, naturally, concerned the most important people in the land, the king, the queen, the lords and ladies. In other words, the Mother Goose rhymes are nothing more than the very cleverly disguised gossip columns of a few centuries ago.
But, Bob.
Yes, B.A.?
We have the Men About Town here as our guests. Suppose they sing a nursery rhyme, and then you tell us about the Believe It or Not
in
the rhyme.
Just what we'll do, B.A. You play them, and I'll tell them. So let's have the Men About Town sing Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
Thank you, boys, and I'm sure everyone will agree that sounds like nothing more than a childish nursery rhyme. But Humpty Dumpty actually is a disguised version of an important event that deeply affected English history. In ancient English, the words Humpty Dumpty meant hunchback, and the hunchback referred to in Humpty Dumpty was none other than Richard III, the murderous and crippled king of England who ruled in the 15th century. He was an undersized, deformed hunchback.
Humpty Dumpty sounds like a good name for him.
But in spite of his appearance, Linda, and his physical defects, he was one of the greatest fighters England ever had. However, he had a rival for the throne, a man called Henry Tudor. Now, Henry got together an army in France, crossed the Channel, and led a rebellion against Richard, or Humpty Dumpty, as he was called. A battle was fought at Bosworth Field, and King Richard was defeated.
How about the wall Humpty Dumpty sat on?
Oh, that wall. That wall, that was the name of the king's favorite horse. One of Henry's soldiers killed the horse, and that's how Humpty Dumpty fell from his horse or the wall. It was then that Richard shouted those historic words, hey horse, my kingdom for a horse. But his cry was in vain, for while he was looking for another horse, another spear came hurtling through the air and pierced him through, and King Richard was killed, and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. The victorious Henry became King Henry VII of England. His son was the famous Henry VIII, and his granddaughter was the famous Queen Elizabeth. So in the apparently nonsensical words of Humpty Dumpty, we find recorded a most important event that completely changed English history, believe it or not.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. There was an old woman who lived in her shoes. She saw many children, didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread. She whipped them all soundly and put them to bed.
Don't tell me that the old woman who lived in a shoe has an historical meaning.
It has, Linda.
Well, who was this old woman, Bob?
That old woman was James I of England, and the reason they called him the old woman was that he was the first king of England to wear one of those wigs with the curls hanging down on his shoulders.
Oh, but he didn't really live in a shoe.
He did too, Linda. The word shoe was the name of the park in which Whitehall Palace, a royal residence, was built.
How about the many children that he didn't know what to do with?
Oh, those children, as he called them, were the 600 members of Parliament, and weren't they a handful of trouble? They were constantly struggling against the king's denomination. And as the nursery rhyme says, he gave them some broth without any bread.
What's the meaning of broth and bread?
Well, the leader of the English Parliament at that time was a man by the name of Bradley, who was called Bread for short. But the king didn't want Mr. Bread in the Parliament, so he replaced him with a man named Broth.
So that's what they mean by, she gave them some broth without any bread.
Yes, and he whipped them all soundly and sent them to bed. Now that means that he dissolved Parliament, which was a terrible blow to English liberty at the time. He sent them all home, or as they expressed it in those days, he sent them to bed. And the verse about the old woman who lived in a shoe actually tells the story of the great struggle which went on between the king and Parliament. After James died, his son, Charles I, succeeded him on the throne, and Parliament had him beheaded. Since then, and until the present day, England has lived under a parliamentary form of government, and all that story is charmingly condensed in the nursery rhyme, "There was an old woman who lived in a shoe." Believe it or not.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She saw many children, didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread. She whipped them all soundly and put them to bed.
Bob, that was great. Tell us another one.
All right, Linda, but let me sketch this one for you. It was in the 16th century when Henry VIII ruled England. You remember him, Linda. He was the famous king who had six wives. Well, at that time, a great deal of the land was owned by the Abbot of Glastonbury. Now, King Henry VIII decided to confiscate this land for the crown. But the Abbot of Glastonbury was a very clever man. And rather than defy King Henry and lose everything, he decided to make him a present of 12 huge estates, hoping in this way to pacify the powerful King Henry and also at the same time keep a little of the land for himself. So just before Christmas, he decided upon a very novel way to give King Henry his present. He had a big Christmas pie baked, and instead of raisins or plums, he placed inside the pie the 12 deeds to 12 of his largest estates. As our scene opens, we find the pie all baked and the 12 deeds all safely inside it. The Abbot of Glastonbury is now talking to his errand boy, Jack.
Jack, I have an errand for you.
Aye, Your Grace.
I have had baked a Christmas pie for the king. I want you to take a horse and convey this pie to the king at his palace in London.
Aye, Your Grace.
Don't tarry along the way, and above all, don't break the pie.
It took Jack, the errand boy, several days to make the journey from Glastonbury to London. When he arrived there, he delivered the pie to King Henry VIII himself, handing him the pie with the compliments of the Abbot of Glastonbury. King Henry cautiously opened the pie, and then he spoke.
Lad, it is our royal wish that you thank the good abbot for the pie which he has so graciously sent me. However, the pie looks tampered with, and I wonder why the abbot should send me just 11 deeds to lands and houses. A strange number, 11.
Your Majesty, my master, the Abbot of Glastonbury, truly baked 12 deeds in that pie.
There are only 11 in it now. What became of the 12th?
It is I who removed it, sire.
You removed it? Explain yourself, lad.
Well, since my master, the Abbot, gave me nothing for bringing the pie here, I inserted my thumb in the pie and pulled out a deed for my pains.
Your pains? He pulled out a deed, a plum, indeed. A goodly lad. He inserted his thumb and pulled out a plum.
Well, I hope your Majesty is not offended.
Offended? Quite contrarywise. You put in your thumb and you pulled out a plum. And by Jupiter, that plum shall be yours. What is your name, lad?
Well, my name is John Horner, but they call me Little Jack Horner.
Little Jack Horner.
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating a Christmas pie. He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a brave boy am I."
And that is the whole story. Little Jack Horner put in his thumb and pulled out a plum. That plum was the estate and manor of Mells in Somersetshire. And on that estate, Jack Horner built a house called the House That Jack Built, and it stands to the present day. The descendants of Little Jack Horner own that large and valuable estate, which was first obtained by their famous ancestor, Little Jack Horner, who sat in a corner and stuck his thumb in a Christmas pie. So, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the three Mother Goose rhymes. Humpty Dumpty, the old woman who lived in a shoe, and Little Jack Horner. Apparently quaint and charming jingles, nonsense for children, but actually they are disguised versions of the most important historic events of the English-speaking people, believe it or not. Time now for the Believe It or Not musical department. B.A., tell us about the rhythm romance you have for it.
Well, Bob, I'm going to play a number which Bing Crosby featured in the picture East Side of Heaven. The title is Hang Your Heart on a Hickory Limb. Now, Linda Lee and the Men About Town will do some plain and fancy harmonic hanging with us.
I see. Well,
As Big would say, Brother B.A., just dust on those contrapuntal cardiacal acrobatics. Okay.
What do you say?
Has love been treating you okay?
Beneath the moon, are you in the groove?
Do you go for romance or disapprove?
Well, I think love is a song and dance. Here's the lowdown on sweet romance. I hung my heart on a hickory limb, but the silly thing fell down, and someone kicked my poor old heart around.
You said you hung your heart on a hickory limb,
but the moon got in its eyes.
And how that fickle moon can hypnotize, it set you down.
These things wouldn't have happened if I'd kept my head, but in the moonlight, my heart ruled instead.
Honey, you hung your heart on a hickory limb,
and I lost it there and then. And yet I'd do the same darn thing again.
And yet I'd do the same darn thing again.
Got there tonight?
Some cola gelatin.
Say, do you make something different out of cola every week?
Pretty nearly. I like that cola flavor. Why shouldn't I?
Well, no reason in the world. Some folks like chocolate, some like vanilla, but, well, I'll string along with you. Make mine cola.
And make it Royal Crown, because here's a cola drink with a really distinctive flavor. In taste tests from coast to coast in small towns and big cities, folks have voted Royal Crown tops for taste. These were certified tests, sworn to before notaries. And in 9 tests out of 10, the vote went to Royal Crown. Its pep and sparkle, its tang and zest have won friends for it everywhere. So next time you want a long, tall, cooling drink, just ask for Royal Crown. And here he is again, Bob Ripley.
In the good old summertime, everyone looks for the nearest place to swim. And while swimming can be fun, it can also be dangerous. It is one man's heroic defiance of a dangerous, raging river that is the subject of the Believe It or Not I shall sketch for you now. The time, June the 6th, 1930. The place, the home of Richard Brooks, on the steep banks of the Monongahela River near Greensboro, Pennsylvania. As our scene opens, we find Richard Brooks and a friend seated on the porch of his little home. They are facing the river, but Richard Brooks does not see the river, for Richard Brooks is blind. As his friend speaks to him, cries of help come up from the river's edge.
Say, Brooks, listen to those kids down by the river. They're yelling help.
Oh, yelling help is their idea of fun. They're just waiting in the river's edge.
Waiting, huh? Well, if they waited out too far and got caught in that current, Say, there are two kids running this way, Brooks.
What?
It's little Floyd Davis and Johnny Morris.
Mr. Brooks, help us, please.
What's the matter, Floyd?
It's Jimmy. He's caught in the current. He's being carried to the depot. He'll drown.
Floyd, you're not playing games,
though. Honest, Mr. Brooks, we're not fooling this time.
Honest,
please.
Mr.
Come on, Floyd.
Honest.
Lead me to the riverbank. Take my hand. Isn't there anyone out there, Bowie?
No.
There are people there, but they say no man will be able to swim against their current.
Mr. Brooks, you're not going into that river.
Oh,
listen
please,
to
hurry.
It.
Hurry.
Come on, Mr. Brooks.
You're blind. It'll be suicide.
Come along, boys. Come along with us, Joe. I know you can't swim, but you can guide me.
You shouldn't, Brooks.
Oh, hurry, please, Mr. Brooks. You're the only one around here who isn't afraid to go in that
I'm coming, boys. Oh, I stumbled there.
It's all right now. I'll take your arm. Here, Brooks, now we're almost at the river bank.
A few more feet.
Careful.
I can feel the edge of the bank now.
Here, climb down here, Brooks. Just 4 steps.
Yeah, right over here.
What about everybody here on the bank? What are they doing?
They won't help, Jimmy. No one is nerve enough to go in after them because the current's so fast since the rain.
There isn't a boat around anywhere.
No.
Good night.
Oh, hurry, please.
Oh, but Brooks, that river swelled up 8 feet since last night. It's roaring like Niagara. You got one chance in a million of saving
hurry.
That kid. He's out there more than 200 feet.
I'm going, Joe.
Oh, hurry, Mr. Brooks. Mr. Hurry.
Where is he?
Swim straight ahead, Brooks.
There he goes.
Brooks, to the right. To the right now. All right, straight.
He's going right now.
To the left a little.
Oh, come on,
watch
Mr.
that current.
Brooks. Oh, the current's pulling him away downstream.
Brooks, Brooks. Listen to me. Straight ahead now.
Come on,
he's almost in front of him. Faster. He's sinking.
Please, Jimmy, please don't go under.
Straight ahead, only about 10 feet now, Brooks.
Oh, Jimmy, just a little minute more. Please, Jimmy, hey, try.
He's right in front of him, Brooks.
Come on, Jimmy.
And arms. Hey, grab him. You'll have to dive, Brooks. He's
Brooks,
gone under.
Oh, please,
dive, Brooks, dive.
Please, let him save Jimmy.
Oh, look, boys, he's got him.
He's got him.
Boy,
Jimmy,
Brooks.
He's bringing
that's
him
marvelous.
Back. That's the way,
Brooks,
Mr.
swim back.
Oh,
here, swim back to my boys. Straight to my boys, Brooks. You're all right. Come on. Fight this way. Come to my boys, Brooks. This way. That's right. Swim.
Certainly the heroism of man could not be taxed to a greater extremity than that faced by Richard Brooks. Blind, midstream in a river with a swiftly racing current, a terrified, drowning boy clinging with a vice-like grip to his neck, Richard Brooks faced an ordeal that would challenge the courage of the most fearless man. Richard Brooks won that fight. Grimly, he fought his way through the churning waters and exhausted, delivered the half-drowned boy to the shore and safety. I think that the bravery of Richard Brooks is so utterly splendid that I have brought him here tonight to speak to you. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Richard Brooks.
Good evening, Mr. Ripley.
Richard Brooks, in your own words, won't you tell our audience what happened when you reached the water's edge?
Boyd took me to the edge of the river, and I dove in with all my clothes on.
With all your clothes on?
Yes, sir. And the people from the banks directed me to swim out about 225 foot and told me to right, to the left, and straight ahead. And they told me to grab ahead of me. And as I grabbed, the boy grabbed me around the neck with a stranglehold.
A stranglehold? That's a
strangle
very serious hold.
Hold,
you know.
Well, it isn't if you know how to break it. And I broke it. I got a chest grip and started back to shore by the sound of their voice.
Yeah.
And the current got me about halfway in, and I went under once. When I got back to shore, I was exhausted. About had very much farther to go. I don't believe we can have made it.
You mean then that instead of one life being saved, two lives might have been lost?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think your heroic action deserves the highest praise, Richard Brooks, that any man can receive, and I'm sure that my audience will agree with me on that.
I thank you. I thank all.
And thank you, Richard Brooks. You are a true, believe it or not. And now here's our little girl, Friday. It's Linda Lee time.
And Bob, I think my song tonight is a believe it or not song.
Well, you're right, Linda. Ladies and gentlemen, Linda Lee now is going to sing the most popular song in the country, but believe it or not, it was written by the great Russian composer Tchaikovsky over 50 years ago. We know that melody today as Moon Love.
nothing but moon love. Will you be gone when the dawn comes stealing through? Are these just moon dreams, grand while the moon beams? But when the moon fades away, will my dreams come true? Much as I love you, don't let me love you. If I must pay for your kiss with only tears, say it's not moon love. Tell me it's true love. Say you'll be mine when the moon disappears. Be mine when the moon disappears.
Bud, how about giving the folks the latest taste test reports? In a taste test in Knoxville, Tennessee, Royal Crown won out over three leading competitors by votes of 3-1, 2-1, and almost 4-1.
Well, how about the one in Charleston, West Virginia?
In Charleston, Royal Crown won hands down over two other leading brands.
And how about the country as a whole?
Royal Crown wins 9 taste tests out of 10.
You can't fool folks on flavor. They can taste the difference every time. And most of the time, their taste selects Royal Crown. Try this sparkling cola drink, compare it with the others, and let your taste decide. You can get the handy home carton that holds 12 big bottles of Royal Crown and only costs a quarter. This will give you 12 big glasses of tangy, cooling refreshment for the weekend. Just remember to ask for Royal Crown.
Remember, too, that the makers of Royal Crown, Knee-High Corporation, Columbus, Georgia, are also makers of the famous Knee-High and Party Pack beverages.
Next week is National Pilgrimage Week in Lourdes, in southern France, where 1 million pious pilgrims seeking solace for the mental and physical ills will go to the sacred Grotto of the Virgin Mary to visit the ever-blooming rose bush, which has been blooming winter and summer for 86 years. Then the Bishop of Lourdes will bless the crowd from the steps of the three churches in one with the words of an old Latin prayer, which I would like to repeat to you now. Even as this rose bush blooms and spends pleasant fragrance, so may your prayers flourish and bring you goodness, beauty, and contentment without compare.
Next week, the bottlers and neighborhood stores who serve you Royal Crown will again present Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Nots, with V.A. Ralph and his orchestra, and lovely Linda Lee. This is Bud Collier wishing you good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.